Greetings and salutations, everyone, to the Halloween edition of the Limelock Technical Net. I'm AC2GS. My name is Roy. I'm net control operator for this, the Limelock Technical Net. And thanks to the technical crew of the repeater committee and the club in general, they've replaced the antenna. And I'm back to getting into the repeater, hopefully with only about 15 watts instead of 150. So it's a good day. I hope everyone's ready for this episode of the Technical Net. Let me drop for a second, and I'll give you the usual link. Okay, if you can't reach me via the radio, then email is a good idea. If you need to either ask me a question, we used to call that mailbag questions, or if you have a topic that you would like to discuss or interact with or hear about, or if you have a puzzle you'd like to share, I'm always looking for technical puzzles to remind people of fundamental concepts and not to take things for granted. Even if you want me to tap a Paul on the shoulder and ask him about a space-related or NASA-related news item, or you can do it directly. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. Anyway, my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. I have a link page with lots and lots of interesting links, some pictures that Paul sent me that will have something to do with SpaceNet Report tonight, some interesting YouTubes and articles that I've seen, a bunch of things that if we ever get to the Science Talk segment of old, they're articles of interest, so if we don't get to them, you can read them at your leisure. They're available on my link page 24/7. You can get to my link page by just typing into your browser my first name, Roy, R-O-Y, .ac2gs, my call sign, .com. In addition, if you're interested in our chat room, you can either go to Limelock's website and follow the links to the chat room, or you can type into your browser an alias of chat.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to the chat room. And as always, I like to remind people that I offer a streaming of the repeater, the Glen Oaks W2VL repeater, as much of 24/7 as I can. You get there by typing into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll give you the audio stream. And I always want to remind people of Mike, KC2NJI, has a great archive of technical nets going as far back as September of 2006. That's at his website, amateurradio.tv. He's already gotten over 1 million visitors, and they're still coming. So please avail yourself of that resource of audio files full of the wisdom of very smart hams that have unfortunately become silent keys. Let me drop for a sec. Okay, as per always, the plan for tonight is to take questions of an amateur radio nature. I'll ask people, hopefully they'll give me their first name and their call sign. I will write down a list, and we will try and keep to that list order. If we run out of questions, I will open up the TechNet to any scientific questions. Even medical questions, as long as they're not anything personal. We do not prescribe or treat over the radio, but if you want to discuss some aspect of science in the news, we'll give it a go. If there's even more time, we'll move on to the Science Talk segment of old. I have those articles always at hand, and we could go over a few of them if you're so inclined. That should take us, hopefully, to 10:15, when it will be time for Paul with the SpaceNet report, which will go to about 11 o'clock, and I will return and tie a bow on it, wish you well, and call it a week. So that's the plan. If everything works the way it's supposed to, if my computer doesn't crash, and my radio works, and the repeater works. But so far, so good. So please, if anyone out there has any amateur radio technical questions, please give me your first name and your call sign.
KD2OGB. I feel like I'm out of ideas, but I'll take a listen.
Okay, glad to have you out there. Anyone with questions, please give me your first name and your call sign.
Warning the net. KD2NSJ.
Did you get me, Roy? KD2OGB.
Yes, I got you, Craig. You said you, I got the impression you didn't really have a question. You were just going to listen.
All right, very good. I'll see if I can get something random to pop in my mind, and I'll bring it up.
Okay, someone ID'd partially. I didn't get their entire call sign. I assume that it was a similar, just showing support for the net. If not, then you have a question. Please ID yourself again.
82 UDU supporting the net.
82 NSJ, Sam, for a question.
Okay, very good. I have you UDU, and I have you Sam. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight for any technical questions? Please give me your first name and your call sign. Okay, Sam, you're up first. Hopefully as time goes on, there'll be other seekers of wisdom. What's your question tonight, Sam?
Due to the new work that they did on the repeater, you sound really good. Okay, Roy, I should know this, but I'm a little confused. What order do you put your meters in after the radio? The tuner, the SWR, and the amp meter? In which order do they go?
Okay, it sort of depends upon what you're looking to find out. Most people will have a standing wave ratio meter beyond the point of their antenna tuner. In other words, you have the antenna, you have the coax cable, it goes into your antenna tuner, then it goes into your standing wave ratio watt meter, then it goes into your radio. By doing that, you're able to figure out if your antenna tuner is correcting for the impedance mismatch. If, for whatever reason you so inclined, wanted to put your standing wave ratio watt meter between your transmission line and your antenna tuner, no matter what you set your antenna tuner for, it would give you the same impedance mismatch. So most people prefer to have their standing wave ratio meters beyond the point of the antenna tuner, between the antenna tuner and the radio.
Okay, and then where is the amplifier, like 100 watts, 200 watts,
The amplifier should go between the watt meter standing wave ratio meter and the transmitter. If you don't do it that way, your watt meter will incorrectly give you not how much power you're outputting, but how much power you're driving your amplifier with.
Thank you, Roy. I'll write it down. Thank you.
You're welcome, Sam. It's a good question. Sometimes even people with a lot of experience unfortunately get it confused, but that's the best way. Again, there's no law that says you can't do it a different way, but you have to understand that you're measuring a different thing if you arrange these devices in a different order. So you just have to keep in mind what you actually want to measure before you decide where to put your measuring devices. Anyone with any questions or comments on this particular subject, please hit the push talk button. Give me your first name and call sign.
Roy, one addition.
Yes, Sam.
Okay, I have a watt meter and a SWR meter. I should not, I can check my wires, but should I have the SWR meter off when I'm running the amp meter?
Well, I mean, most, if it's a combined meter, most of those meters have a switch, one or the other. You probably get more benefit, I would think, using it as the watt meter in standby, and just to check the standing wave ratio when you're either tuning up or occasionally just to double check yourself. But, you know, I have something very, very similar, and I seldom switch it over to the SWR meter. I'm more interested to know what kind of power I'm outputting.
Okay, I got you. I just don't want to burn out the SWR meter. All right, but I like the way you do yours. Thank you.
Patricia.
Yes, Wesley.
Put me in a row. What is my number on the list?
Well, basically at this point, one, but there might be a problem either with the microphone or something because you kind of cut out intermittently. Like there's an open circuit on your microphone.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. How about now?
That's perfect.
Okay, so I'll wait for my time.
Okay, like I said, you basically you're the only one with any kind of comment or question, but I will throw it out to the audience once again if anyone has any amateur radio-related technical questions or topics they would like to discuss. Please hit that push-to-talk button. Give me your first name and your call sign.
KD2WOT, this is Chris. Good evening, Roy.
Good evening, Chris. Do you have a question for us tonight, or a comment, or a topic?
Yes, I do. It's a very, very simple one, Roy. Is this normal every time somebody unkeys that I hear this?
Yes, it's a courtesy tone. It's used to indicate that that you've waited beyond a certain time. As we link more devices, we've collected more different types of courtesy tones. So if you're listening at Selden, you hear slightly different courtesy tones than Glen Oak. When IRLP is linked in, you'll hear an additional courtesy tone, but those things are called courtesy tones. There was a time a few years ago where there were at least four courtesy tones every time someone unkeyed, unless they were a quick keyer, which is frowned upon.
KD2WOT. Okay, well, thank you very much. I don't, you know, I don't hear that typically on a lot of the repeaters. I'm relatively new to the radio, so I just thought I'd ask. And there isn't any way to suppress that, is there?
Short of going in from something like EchoLink, because I don't think EchoLink gets all those courtesy tones, no. There have been more than a few people who have desired that ability. In the old days when there were four of them, it could be jarring. Almost all repeaters, you know, there are some that are kind of weird, have a courtesy tone. A lot of times they go for a very, very short staccato beep or something, so you might not even realize what's going on. And of course, there's always the possibility of people quick keying, so they key before the courtesy beep is heard. So most repeaters, though, have courtesy beeps. The only ones I'm familiar with that don't are the ones that aren't designed with repeater controllers. My other club has a Yaesu DR2X, Fusion Digital and FM Analog, and for whatever reason, they designed it without a lot of standard repeater features, including a courtesy tone. But most do. If you listen very, very closely, and if the guy who unkeys and the next guy who keys gives it enough time, you'll hear some kind of tone coming out of a repeater.
Once again, KD2WOT. Okay, well, thank you very much. I appreciate that answer. Thank you very much.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
Yes, and another reason for that, of course, is to, all these repeaters have timeouts. You know, if you go too long, you're going to time out the repeater without waiting for that courtesy tone. You know, the other station will pick it up, and the next thing you know, 30 seconds later maybe, the repeater will quit and have to reset. So that's an important reason to have these tones as well. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, you're quite right, Paul. The courtesy tones is a courtesy that we all try and give each other. You got to give the repeater a little time to reset, otherwise it'll get upset and time out on people. I knew a guy who used to recommend that people key up right before the courtesy tone. I don't know exactly what psychiatric medication he had stopped taking at the time, but I'm sure it was a significant one. But yeah, courtesy tones are unfortunately a necessity, especially with people who are quick hearers. Every so often you'll pass by a conversation where guys are in a very heated conversation and they just can't leave a pause. They just have to respond immediately. And inevitably, at one point or another, the repeater just times out on both of them. Anyway, this is Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra AC2GS, and we're here with the Limark Technical Net. If anyone has any questions of a technical nature, please tell me your first name and your call sign.
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay, Wesley, I assume you're going to discuss Laura.
Yes, I will.
Okay, feel free. I have been somewhat fascinated reading little bits and pieces, but I've never submerged myself in the topic yet. There's always something else to distract me, so feel free.
Okay, Antoixian. From the beginning, it's going to sound kind of not interested, but it's quite interesting subject. LoRa is proprietary low-power wide area network modulation technique. It is based on spread spectrum modulation technique derived from CREEP spectral spectrum technology. It is developed by CLEO of Grenoble, France. It's acquired for $5 million by Simtech, America, and it is still growing. Imagine that you have a small radio that costs you $20, or $29, or $32, and you have everything with it. You have a battery, you have a PCB power, and you have antenna, you have everything, everything. And then you have another one, and then you have another one. You can create your private network, it's free of license, you can do whatever you want to do, send whatever you want to send, whether it's encrypted or not. The concept for ham radio operators was introduced by Ham Radio Crash Course. It's on YouTube, Ham Radio Crash Course. They have 220,000 subscribers. It's a very nice guy. If you, Rich, want to say anything more about this guy, feel free.
Not particularly, Wesley. I have seen him around. He seems to have interesting topics. I think I mentioned last week that for whatever reason, I don't tend to listen to a lot of amateur radio-related YouTube. Because it's kind of a deja vu all over again, but I'm sure I'm missing in on some of it. LoRa is one of those things I tend to read about a lot more than in maker circles. You know, people who put together telemetry devices and Raspberry Pis and Arduinos and such, rather than, for the most part, amateur radio. I assume that finally amateur radio is kind of trying to figure out how it can kind of add a certain facet to the hobby in addition to all the other things we have kind of taken on and tried to to manage in our hobby. So I'm interested in what kind of new ways LoRa is being used in amateur radio these days.
Okay, a little bit more description. You could have LoRa device for 20-something dollars as a network server. Gateways send information via Wi-Fi, Ethernet, or cell phone to the network server, which is responsible for the network management function like over-the-air activation, data duplication, dynamic frame routing. So what we have is we have any application we want. The frequency of operation is 800 to 850, I believe, megahertz, which includes the free band. Anybody could use it, like 27 megahertz in the old time was the free radio. And it is a transmitter, so a transceiver. So LoRa used the spread spectrum modulation. It's a long-range communication link. The more you put together, the more you have from it. And from possible application for home user, encrypted GPS show on a map, messaging sensor or perimeter connected for security if you want, temperature, agriculture, fire, pressure, kids and pets tracking, private network, range longer than cell phone. If you are in the area that where the cell phone is not working, you can extend it. You could actually control your plant, your field when you have your agricultural whatever. And you could connect to it any sensors you want in ham radio. It allows you messaging. So in other words, it's an interesting story because I don't believe that that guy that I was talking about found about it, but I have an idea. First, let me give you the messaging. So let's say you have Android and you have no internet and you have no Wi-Fi, nothing, Zippo, but you have this device, you connect it through Bluetooth to your Android, and then let's say 3 miles later you connect another one to your phone. When it's light of sign, line of sight, so it is going to go there. If it's not, then you could put another device in the middle. It's going to retransmit the signal, receive and retransmit in a mesh. So you could, for the people who want to not use any kind of existing networks, but they could extend it by adding another 20-something dollars into it, and it's going to work. Now, for ham radio, if you were to just send a signal through your transceiver and miles away or hundreds of miles away, another transmitter is receiving that signal, then you have text messaging. So actually, let's say you don't have any internet and we have two Androids, or you have one Android or one iPhone, let's say, and we have two of those small devices for 20-something dollars. If you type something on the first one, the second one is going to have in its messaging window, it's going to have that message. And by the same way, you could actually do the censoring. So there are a number of use for it. I have sent three videos, the one that was sent a few weeks ago, and then a lot of information. Also that ham radio operator from Ham Radio Crash Course included a lot of links. So I gave the same links that are there to you in email, and eventually, if you decide, you can put it on your website. Also, a GPS and it's showing position on the map. So actually, if you have a kit on the field, or you have a pet, or you have a car and you want to know where a car is, if somebody is willing to steal it, well, if you're quick enough, if you don't sleep. Anyhow, plenty of opportunities. Now, for the commercial application, is growing like crazy. If you think about a congested area like New York, where there are plenty of houses, if you have an idea how to use it, you can create your own network and people have it because they need it. Anyhow, Dr. Roy, N2XGM.
Okay, very good, Wes. So basically, it's a spread spectrum technology right below the 900 megahertz, wide open to the public band. There's lots of chips available. Again, if for people who like to tinker, look at the maker sites. Look at Adafruit, and there's a few other companies that cater to people who are building all kinds of Raspberry Pi and similar devices. There's a large bunch of displays and sensors, telemetry devices, and you can really do a lot of fun things. I've been playing around with Raspberry Pis, building something called a Pi Hole for my network. It operates as a name server, and it blocks advertisements. I'm having fun tinkering with that. So LoRa is one of those things. It's the radio protocol. Again, haven't really heard that people have done anything specifically amateur-related at this point. It's more of tinkering, but tinkering is loads of fun, and you never know what will grow from tinkering.
No response. Okay, a few more things. In the Wikipedia, you have a LoRa and the explanation for 915, 923 megahertz, 433 megahertz, and the extended transmission, the upper networking layer, so it's like a could be layered in within the network and could use several different protocols. It looks like this thing is growing, right? But it requires a little bit reading. All of the links are there. Now, the device, how small is the device? The device shown on the picture on Wikipedia is probably about 1 inch by 1 inch, or maybe 1.5 inch by 1.5 inch. That's all. With antenna, with everything. And to XGA.
VDH, would you comment?
Yes, John.
I was wondering, you mentioned it was spread spectrum. Is it direct sequence, frequency hopping? And if it's used for amateur radio, are we required to use only the authorized spreading sequences? I think for ham radio, we're only allowed certain spreading sequences. Is this going to be required for that for ham radio?
Yeah, John, in its present form, it's not really amateur radio. The band width that it uses is the public one. So unless you kind of retrofit it for amateur radio frequencies, those limitations don't hold for this technology.
I see. Okay. Is it, I think Bluetooth is frequency hopping, if I'm not mistaken. So what kind of spreading technique does this use?
Okay, Wesley, are you up to date with that? Because I just know vaguely that it does, it's a spread spectrum technology. I haven't had a chance to look into the charming details of it.
It is quick spectrum, spread spectrum, CSS. It's a spectrum, a spread spectrum technique that uses wideband linear frequency modulated creep pulses to encode information. It's what is a creep would be the sinusoidal signal whose frequency increases or decreases all over the time, in that would be the polynomial expression relationship between the time and the frequency. So it is not the continuous signal, but it is rather a pocket. That what I would say, but it is a spread spectrum. So you asking me if it's a frequency hopping. You got me there. I'm a bad student. Bad student. What I see here also, it's Doppler effect resistant, ultra wide band for precision ranging and low rate wireless network. It could also work at 2.45 gigahertz. Question is it a free civil band there? I'm not sure. But, that's what I can say. Bluetooth work exactly on the same principle, then to exist.
Oh, okay, because I think Bluetooth is frequency hopping, where they specify a known set of frequencies and then use a pseudo-random sequence to jump around within that set of frequencies, and that's how they do the spreading. The other one, direct sequence, that's where they use a very high-speed pseudo-random code to essentially do PSK with it, and that's how they spread the spectrum, by using this very fast code. So yeah, if it's similar to Bluetooth, I think Bluetooth is hopping. So yeah, that would probably be somewhat compatible with it too. Okay, thanks.
Using it for the ham radio. If you were to send a creep, I'm not sure if I pronounce properly the creep, it's C-H-I-R-P, creep. Do I pronounce it properly? It's a digital communication spread spectrum, CSS, and use wide band linear frequency modulated creep pulses to encode information. It is a sinusoidal signal whose frequency increases, right? So all decreases, whatever. But the question, but the thing is, if we were to send it over the microphone or over the ham radio, we're not using the frequency hopping. We're just extending that network. So let's say you have a local network, and that's somewhere in France. And now, by use of ham radio, or even ham radio, you can have it in New York and create an extension of it, and it's going to work. Enter Exchange.
Wesley, by the way, it's pronounced chirp.
Thank you. Chirp. Chirp. Thank you. But think, I don't know how it goes with the FCC. Let's say you have a certain application in France or in Poland or let's say in Germany, and now you're sending not in the frequency hopping, but you're sending the physical chirp through the radio, and now from the other side, that radio, whatever it could receive, is receiving the chirp, and the chirp is delivered to another device. Like there will be another LoRa, low range module, and then this will connect to its own network that is in civil band. What do you think about it, Dr. Roy?
Well, it's interesting. I don't know what technological advantage it has under, compared to modalities that are already available to us. There are some aspects of the technology that probably could be introduced. Obviously, encryption technology, which is part of it, is a no-no. You can't encrypt signals in the amateur band. And I'm not even quite sure if the FCC is particularly thrilled with the concept of any kind of spread spectrum technology, because I'm not aware of any of that going on the amateur radio band. So they might not particularly like that aspect of this technology. I don't know.
KD2WOT with a comment.
Yes, Chris.
So it's the 33 centimeter band in the U.S. Apparently from 902 to 928 megahertz. And you know, when I look at it on the SDR, I mean, it looks like some noise, basically, you know, some horizontal signals here and there. And I don't know how you would modulate voice in there, and I'm just curious, you know, what sort of propagation you might see with 933 megahertz. Back to you.
Well, I don't know the modulation technology for this. I would assume it's more for data transfer. So they probably would digitize the voice, and you'd have to deal with some kind of voice encoding and decoding. As far as propagation, 900 and change megahertz would probably not be that much more different than the 1.2 gigahertz. By the way, our club's repeater that worked on 1.2 gigahertz has been repaired and replaced and is functioning now. So you guys with 1.2 gigahertz transceivers, you can go wacky with it. So it's, you know, it's not quite as long range as VHF. As you get to microwave, the signals kind of get shorter and shorter. So I would assume it would be akin to the type of propagation that you would see in something like 1.2 gigs.
KD2WOT. So that would be pretty much, you know, a repeater-based system. I mean, certainly not too much in the way of simplex.
Yeah. I wouldn't see it as a long-range technology, personally, especially these are very, at least the ones that I've seen, are very low-power transceivers, as Wesley mentioned. They're something like an inch by an inch and a half. So, you know, those transistors are not going to carry away 5-10 watts of power. So I'm thinking that for the most part, these are meant to be short-range data transmission technologies, either just digital or telemetry, something along those lines. It does, as I mentioned before, have protocols for encrypting the data if you want the data to be secure. So yeah, this is not long range communications, at least in its present form.
Okay. Thinking about long range and short range, well, it is named long range wide area network, but it's a shortened range, the light of sight, line of sight. But if we were to think it's a toy, LoRa Alliance, so it was purchased by Symtec for $5 million in 2017, but I may be wrong. But anyhow, LoRa Alliance is association created by in 2015 to support LoRa One. There would be wide area network for long range wide area network protocol, as well as to ensure interoperability of its products and technologies, non-profit organization of 500 members, including IBM, Evernet, Acelity, Microchip, Orange, Cisco, KPN, Swisscom, Symtec, A2A, Smart City, Bunjuez, Telecom, Syncal, Promises, whatever, there's a long list with it, and it says that is in operation right now in 100 countries. It is administered by VTM Group in Beaverton, Oregon. Researchers have proposed that LoRa-1 could solve some the issues covering power usage in 4G, 5G technologies. Interesting comment was that it works on 900 and change megahertz, but we could use it for the ham radio bands. They are not normally used in, gosh, I don't remember, maybe somebody does. What are the ham radio bands of 20 gigahertz? That would be something that we could use. And you can actually transmit for any one of the transmitters from each one of transceivers and receive at the same time. So it's full duplex. It doesn't take the time to process the information. It does, but it's not noticeable. Dr. Roy.
Well, AC2GS, by the way, there are intrepid amateur radio operators who use the microwave bands, and Dick used to be, Dick K2RIW used to be one of them. He used to be on the email list and different websites that you could read all about these people. It still strikes me as somewhat esoteric to fiddle around with the 20 gigahertz. It's not for the weak at heart. So to just kind of rig something up on the 20 gigahertz band still requires a certain innate talent at this point. You're not going to be able to call up a company and say, you know, send me three of them. So it might down the road. Again, I don't know exactly what it adds, what it subtracts. Will the FCC look favorably to a spread spectrum technology mode? As far as I'm aware, it hasn't yet. I don't know if it's simply because no one asked it or because it suggested that it wasn't going to look kindly on it. So I don't know that much about this particular technology as far as the FCC goes. So, if someone knows something that about the FCC's belief systems as far as spread spectrum technology on the amateur band, I would love to hear about it.
DDH with a comment?
Yes, John.
I think the only thing the FCC has ruled is that if we operate spread spectrum, we are only permitted to use a certain spreading sequence, defined by the taps on the shift register that's generating that pseudo-random code. In other words, we can't just go use anything because the FCC wants to have the ability to decode it. I forget what the taps are, but I think that's the only ruling that they have passed, is that we're only permitted to use certain spreading sequences. Go ahead.
Okay, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I think that's part of their broader tendency, that devices that manipulate data, as long as they do it in a non-random, documented way, and the FCC, and it's published, so they're aware of the way to uncode it, if you will, they're okay with it. So that's just expanding it to the concept of a spread spectrum technology, where it's not a completely random, just pseudo-random, and you can publish the protocols of determining where you're jumping to, so you don't have to chase people. But as far as I'm aware, John, maybe you know, is there any spread spectrum technology-based transmission mode that's being even experimented on the amateur bands? I'm totally unaware of them.
I remember reading, this is going back now 5, 6, 7 years, I remember reading an article, I think it was in QEX, where somebody had used, I believe it was a Delta modulation system and then use that output drive direct sequence threat spectrum. But I forget what band it was on. I think it was on either 900 or 40 megahertz band. But it was, if I remember correctly, using Delta Mod with the output driving a direct sequence a spread spectrum system with the spreading code.
Okay, I'll have to dig back into my QEX magazine file. I don't know. I assume it didn't take off because I don't recall reading anything since then about it. So, you know, sometimes people kind of do it for their own sake, and it doesn't really take off. There's a lot of technologies out there. If you look hard enough, at one point or another, I think I put on my link page a protocol called M17, which is an open source digital voice protocol that a group of amateur radio operators who don't want to standardize with DMR or Fusion from Yaesu or D-Star from ICOM, they want an open source version. So they're promoting this M17 protocol. So there's lots of people tinkering around with all kinds of technology that many of us aren't aware of, because you know they're in a little cocoon and it hasn't kind of burst forth into butterflies. But that's interesting that someone was actually doing something like that. Again, I don't really recall reading anything on the subject, which is curious. I read a lot of it in computer magazines, because of course, as was mentioned earlier, it's an aspect of Bluetooth and to a degree Wi-Fi technology. But in amateur radio, probably partially because of the frequency ranges that are most popular, you don't have the beam forming capabilities for HF. You'd have to have enormous antennas to do beam forming, whereas for Wi-Fi at the 2.4 and 5 gigs, it's a relatively small antenna array that can accomplish feats of magic.
I just happened to grab it. I looked in my pile, stack of books, and I see that I have the ARRL Spread Spectrum Source Book, and they mentioned the QEX of June 1984. So this is going back a ways, June 1984, where it says FCC grants Spread Spectrum STA, which I guess is a special temporary authority. So there was some interest way back when there with it. Even to the point where ARRL came out with the Spread Spectrum Source Book. The big problem is synchronization. That's really the big bugaboo, that how you get the stations to synchronize their clocks that are driving their shift register, which is generating that spreading code. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, if anything, these days it's probably an easier problem. GPS chips are relatively inexpensive, and if you can get a lock signal on a few satellites, you can get very good accurate time. So if anything, I think the last 5-10 years have made it easier for something like that.
Yeah, I agree with you. So there was experimenting going on with it. I don't know what the current experimenting is, but there was activity in it in the past.
Well, I think historically there was a lot of that when new technology comes out almost an hour and a half after it's announced, some guy with a call sign starts a little project. You know, the same thing happened when the Internet finally started to become public. People thought of packet protocols, and you have AMPTOR and these other packet-based radio protocols. But a lot of times they just kind of fizzle out either because they just didn't serve a great purpose for the amateur radio community, or they reached technological limitations, or they reached some problems with intellectual property problems.
You know what I think happened, Roy? I think some of the interest sort of got sucked away by the weak signal hailer stuff, all of the various new modes that he has. I think that captured a lot of the investigated further. But as you say, there's a lot of stuff going on, so we'll have to see.
Yes, indeed, and Joe Taylor's stuff is amazing. Although I still remember one time I got a false signal report when I didn't even have my antenna hooked up. So I don't know if it was just some noise in the system or what the hell happened that one single time. But it's sort of amazing how incredible you can get signal reports below the noise floor. You know, in a perfect world, you know, one technology should not dampen another. There's more than enough different little nooks and crannies of technology for us to spend a lifetime and a half on. So, you know, that would be a shame if people just ended up. But, you know, I mean, like anything, you know, I often say tools are not moral or amoral. You know, you can take a hammer and build a house. You can take a hammer and beat your neighbor's head in. So the same with Joe Taylor's stuff. You can do fascinating stuff, but I know more than a few guys who sit there and watch television, and as they're watching television, they hit a computer key, and it does automatic logging from FT8, and, you know, they're getting worked all state and worked all this and worked all that. And, you know, it's kind of like my attitude about bowling. If you can drink beer while you're doing it, it's not a sport.
I never heard that one. Okay. Yeah, that's true. It's just that all of these various modes, I guess at a point you can almost get overloaded with it. The WSTJ signals, or JT signals, they seem to have provided capture for the nation and interest. So I guess the other areas are sort of stuff, but we'll see. Again, it's all part of the fascinating hobby.
Yes, indeed, and I mean, I am always amazed when I see the amount of activity that's going on the FT8 frequency. Every so often, just out of curiosity's sake, I go down there and I check it out, and it is busy as anything. It's incredible to watch happening. People have not tired a bit of it.
Oh, yeah, I've noticed that. Yeah, what is it, 14.075. All of 20 meters is dead, but as soon as you come to, I think it's 14.075, you hear all of the activity there, a lot like it's a band opening.
Yeah, it's sort of incredible to see. And I think people are actually programming, I don't know if it's directly radios. I know my Flex has a remote access software application that works on my iPhone and my iPad, and it has a module for FT8. You could just hit a couple of buttons and bring up FT8 and do it on an iPad. You know, it's fascinating. It's kind of sterile for me. You know, today was a CQ contest, and you know, playing tag, I don't know, it just doesn't work for me. I was on the 10-meter net that my other club runs, and I like to exchange ideas and opinions. And FT8 just exchanges the bare minimum of your call sign, signal strength, signal report, and you're out. So, I don't know. I mean, for those people who like to play tag, it's very effective method.
Yeah, you know, Roy, you mentioned it. I just turned on my HF receiver, 14.067, 69, 14.070, and here's 14.075. can hear all the activity. Yeah, there's 14074, 075. The whole band is dead except for right around there, right on that frequency.
Yeah, it's very popular, and because of the protocols that Joe and this guy Frank, because the two of them, that's where it gets its name. You know, it's there's always hundreds of people. I've never once gone to these band frequencies and seen nothing. There's always some activity going on. It's sort of amazing.
A few more information. Laura can be up to 3 miles, which would be 5 kilometers in urban areas, and 10 miles, which would be 15 kilometers or more in the rural areas line of sight. But interesting is that the network that you create, whether you have a 2 devices, 3 devices, 10 devices, whatever, has an architecture that network, while the LoRa physical layer enables the long-range communication link, is also responsible for managing communication frequencies, data rate, a power for all of the devices. The devices in network are asynchronous and transmit when they have a data available to send. In other words, it's a smart thing. Data transmitted by end node devices received by multiple gateways, which forward the data packets to centralized network server, if you have one, if you need one. So in other words, you can create really something interesting. But when I was talking about the high frequency ham radio bands, I wasn't thinking about using it as a hope frequency. Rather as the extension of the networks. In other words, you have a network in New York, and then you have another network in somewhere outside New York, wherever you need. And you're using some of barely used ham radio bands just to extend that network and to extend.
Okay, that's a possibility, but you know the technology of mesh, Wi-Fi based mesh networks for amateur radio operators is not a particularly new one. There are a lot of people who have rewritten the firmware of their Wi-Fi access points and enabled the mesh networks of local amateur radio operators to kind of get together and build their own mesh network with feeds in and out of the internet, but with error correction and all the other things that internet connections tend to have, but in a Wi-Fi sort of a way. The West Coast has a couple of clusters of that. The problem with mesh networks, at least using Wi-Fi technology, has been that you have to have rather close-knit group of people doing this. So the mesh cannot be very wide, and a lot of times they'll use highly directional antennas, but then you have to point it at specific nodes, so it's not able to kind of jump from one node to another node. So although people are playing around with mesh technology, and Laurel, I hate to add an extra little nuance to it. It's not quite ready, I think, for prime time, unfortunately.
KD2WOT, comment.
Yes, Chris.
So, I think you hit the nail on the head, Roy. It seems to me that this is kind of like an industrial or Internet of Things type thing. Like, for example, I think the signals that I see when I look at it on my SDR may very well be my my light bulbs that I can control from a module that I have. You know, stuff like that, I think.
Yes, you can, but you can also control your pets, your kids, find out where they are, see them on the map. You can have, let's say,